You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Yeah, I figured we'd just go right in and start talking about, our retro crushes on our various people, and then Grease.
Okay, cool. sounds like fun. I'm gonna try not to gush too much.
Well, by all means, you're allowed to. If I can make a fool of myself in front of Christy McNichol, then why not, right?
Oh, well, congratulations on meeting Christy McNichol. That's really kind of a cool retro thing to do.
I was so surprised that it was as easy as it was. I was expecting kind of like more of a grouping around her. Mm-hmm. But there was hardly anybody. And I was just kind of like, how in the world did this happen? How can people not flock to her table? But I get it. You know, if you haven't been into the game in a while and you're not putting anything new out, I kind of get that you kind of lose relevance for people. And it's just the older folks like myself that kind of like go, my God, it's Christy McNichol.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember. What event was that at?
What was that?
What event was that?
Oh, it was a flea market, actually.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, they had this up all night flea market, and the guys that were from Leave It to Beaver, the guys that played Beaver and Wally, they were at the table next to her.
Okay.
I wish I remember their names. I never remember their names.
Yeah, see, that I didn't watch. Yeah, so yeah. I don't know them. That's a little before my time.
Yeah, that's way retro.
Christy McNichol, I remember.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of other people at the at the various tables at the the event, and some of them had kind of a bigger crowd, and it because I knew that they were doing current content that people were into, and so that's what I think that's what draws if you've got like your younger kid or whatever that's into whatever it is. And there's an artist there or something like that that is in this TV show or in, that's a cartoon, who makes cartoons or whatever. Then, they kind of, the kid kind of sucks the parent over into things like that. And then they go, by the way, there's Christy, and then, then you get the story or whatever. But for me, it was just, I was just going there to see Christy. And of course, made myself sound like a fool when I talked to her, and my whole
I'm sure she appreciated it.
Yeah, the whole teenage crush, started coming out.
Having a devoted fan.
Yeah. You remember that time you were in that movie? It was awesome.
Yeah. Remember Network Battle of the Network Stars?
You were great. You were fantastic. Okay, that's all I got.
Well, good enough. More than most people get out of their high school crush. They're TV crush.
Well, no, it's just like I paid to have my picture with her, and as you saw online, and then the autograph. And she actually said to me, "You smell great," and
ooh, how nice.
And I'm like, "My God, Christy McNichol says I smell great," and I just, that to me, I'm going to carry that with me forever now.
There you go.
Yep, that one little comment.
Yeah, but, that's all she had to do.
Yep.
Make you a happy guy.
Yeah, okay. We talked about her movie, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, she did with Dennis Quaid and Mark Hamill. So we talked about that for a few minutes. And then I asked her if she wanted to be on the podcast, and she said no, but I get it.
Oh, well. Oh, that would have been really cool, huh?
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Oh, well. Maybe next time. She doesn't know what she's missing.
I get it. I've read enough about her that I understand that, she had this, this emotional break, from the industry. And so she's just kind of said, I'm checked out of that now, and it's for her own health. I get it. I completely get it.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay, well,
but you never know until you ask. So I'm going to continue to ask whoever it is that I come, you know, cross my paths with, you know, because you never know who's going to say yes.
Yeah, do it. No, that's a great idea.
Yep. But I understand when they say no.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, Rorty.
Okay. Well, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? But yeah, it would have been awesome to have her on. No, right. Stop thinking about that now. Okay. Moving on. Okay. Moving on.
Okay.
So. All right. Let's see. Yep. Still recording. Good. Okay.
This is 70-something podcast.
Evel Knievel sold separately or with the Evel Knievel stunt cycle from Ideal.
Use the force, Luke.
This is Bonsai Retro Club. I am Dave. Online, I have got our special returning guest, Suzanne.
Hi. Great to be back.
And we don't have you for a music topic this time, so it's going to be a little more different than what you have been doing with us.
Yeah, that's okay. We can expand.
We can. We totally can. And it's a lot like the first conversation we had together where you kind of... you know, kind of gushed a little bit about a crush you had back then, back in the 70s. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. We started out talking about teen idol crushes and such.
Yeah. So this kind of blends right into that. And for the listener's sake, you may have listened to me gushing about Christy McNichol. I did that solo podcast episode. Hopefully you checked it out. If you didn't, I get it. It's just me solo. And, you know, who knows if that's even exciting to listen to or not. So, but on this particular case, Suzanne and I were communicating. We're like, you know, we should really come up with a topic. And the thought idea came across where, you know, I had this thing on Twitter where I asked everybody about their retro crushes. And everybody was giving these really great tweets back and their answers. And did you tweet out that you liked John Travolta?
No, I tweeted Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, okay.
But, you know, I have several I could have chosen from.
You had a lot of crushes going on back then.
I did. You know, there were a lot of nice teen idols to choose from. And, you know, Tiger Beat was just full of that stuff. So,
Tiger Beat, they had to have done quite a bit with Travolta then, especially with Welcome Back, Carter.
Yeah, I would think so. Welcome Back, Carter was so much fun. And you were not cool unless you came back in, you know, to school after, I think what they were on Thursdays, I think I remember, or something. Well, whatever day it was, you came back the next day. If you weren't talking about what went on the episode of Welcome Back, Carter, you just like weren't one of the cool kids. So it was fun.
Yeah. Vinny Barbarino.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I had to love him.
Yeah.
He was cute.
And I'm sure the fame from Saturday Night Live didn't help. Or not Saturday Night Live, but Saturday Night Fever, sorry.
Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, definitely. One definitely played into the other. But, I mean, Vinnie Barbarino was a lot more cartoony. It was a lot more, and it was years before, because I think I was in middle school when that show was on. But yet, Saturday Night Fever, yeah, maybe was like my last year of middle school. You know, when you're in eighth grade and you're tough and you're like, I can go see an R-rated movie, sure. So, you know, there was a big jump there in subject matter and content, so.
Yeah, and I don't think there was really that many checks and balances, you know, for kids getting into those type of movies back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot more loose guidance, let's say, as far as who got into what movie.
Yeah.
But
you're close enough. It's like, yeah. Wait a minute, I'm a 12-year-old. What are you talking about? I'm close enough. All right. Well, thanks.
Well, you know, you snuck by, or you got somebody's teenage sister to get you in or something like that.
Yeah, somebody opened the side door for you. You're okay. but on the other side of the coin, we were talking about retro crushes. One that I didn't bring up on that tweet is, I did bring it up, that I was I had a big retro crush on Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah.
And so my retro crush probably started Xanadu, I would say. So Xanadu and Grease definitely blended together for me. I actually remember one of the times where there was this neighborhood girl, and like you, she had a big crush on John Travolta. And this was right in the heyday of Grease. And both of us kind of met up together and was in her living room, and we wrote love letters to – I wrote to Olivia, and she wrote to John.
Wow.
Yeah. So I still remember that. I had no idea what happened to those letters, though. It'd be really fun to have that.
I wrote to Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. That's how I was. I was a fan. I was a big fan of Olivia Newton-John, and I remember I was a singer. So
right.
I just thought she was amazing.
She is so talented.
I had a couple albums. It was nice.
So were you a Xanadu fan?
You know, not so much, because I think that was later. So maybe I was a little jaded at that point. That was more when I was like 11 or 12, I was an Olivia Newton-John fan.
Okay.
And I think it was even maybe a little bit before Grease came out, when she was more like a country singer.
Okay.
Not that I really listened to country music, but I listened to her because I just thought she had the coolest voice on the planet. So, and like I said, I was pretty young. I wanted to sing. I would, you know, just like sing her songs all over the place and listen to the albums over and over again. And so, yeah, I had sent in the letter. And, you know, when you used to do that, they would send you back autograph pictures and stuff.
Right.
So I think I had a couple. I think I had a couple of autograph pictures that she sent back, or her people sent back, whatever. So
that's
it was
awesome.
Neat.
Yeah, I don't think mine ever made it into the mail. I'm not sure. Because I know I never received a picture of her. So I feel
a little sorry.
Yeah. Maybe
I don't have mine anymore. I would share one.
Yeah, if only I can find like some flea market she's signing autographs at, I can go like talk to her.
I guess she might be a little bit more popular than Christy McNichol, though.
Yeah, probably. I would think so. There'd probably be a little bit more of a line.
Well, let's wish her good health and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, exactly.
Olivia's got to, you know, stay on solid ground and such. So
yeah, you know, well, let's get physical. all right. So then that leads me to Grease. The common theme between our two retro crushes is that movie.
John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, Grease. The Broadway smash that made theatrical history by becoming one of the longest-running musical comedies of all time breaks loose on the motion picture screen. John Travolta, the sensational star of Saturday Night Fever, ignites the screen in Grease. Does it all with Olivia Newton-John in her motion picture debut.
What's wrong with you?
I meant something to you.
We made out under the dark.
Who is there? Till 2 o'clock.
Some flame, don't mean a thing. But I'm on the summer night.
I guess I'm gonna be picking these people who think I'm a leper.
Hey, cheer up. The hippie from Kinnicky's like a Hallmark card.
You pig.
I love it when you talk, dude.
John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John explode across the motion picture screen in Grease, the movie filled with more song, more dance, more of everything that makes a great musical unforgettable. John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John together for the first time in Grease.
So was that that movie a big deal for you?
Oh yeah, it was big. It was big for everyone. I mean, especially if you're a young person, because once again, it was kind of the movie itself. That was kind of, again, on the cartoony side. I mean, it even started out like with those little animated credits and stuff.
I thought those were so damn cool.
Yeah, they were cute. They really were. And they kind of set the tone, which was different from what I heard, which was really different than the play that this came from. I seem to remember being told from like an aunt of mine who was a big fan of the show that was on Broadway,
right,
that it was much raunchier and a lot more mature than what made it to the screen. You know, what made it to the screen was kind of silly and jumpy and funny and toned down to a certain degree. It was a lot of like raunchy jokes and stuff going on the actual, on the stage.
I don't know. There's that whole sequence where Rizzo's almost pregnant, you know? I mean, how could that... That's not toned down.
In retrospect, it's true. There was like a teenage pregnancy scare in that movie.
Right.
And even as a 12-year-old, like, I don't remember thinking that was like, ooh, this wild, terrible thing that happened, you know? And they're smoking. They're high school kids, and they have cigarettes.
Right.
In various scenes.
Right.
And I don't know, at the time, like you said, it was a little more, you know, loosey-goosey with the rules and as far as, oh, what we have to shield our children from.
Right.
So it's true. It was not like totally white bread, you know, cutesy. But it was definitely more kind of a cartoonish kind of tone. And they did keep a little bit of that in there, but I'd heard it was much worse.
Okay. Now that makes me really interested in the play now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you had Kaneki who had the busted condom, and then they had the scare there for pregnancy. So
yeah that's true.
Yeah, as far as that goes, other than maybe like the way the T-Birds kind of acted, you know, where women were kind of possessions, you know, that had kind of, you know, I don't think that was very PC, but it was PC for the 70s, but I don't think it's PC now. So there's that theme that's going on in it, and that was kind of adult of sorts. But, you know, just when you think that, you know, it's getting kind of touchy, then they break into a song and mm-hmm. it's all good. So
yeah, and they're dancing and doing cartwheels and stuff. And
Right. Right. So what was your favorite song from that movie?
I think Summer Love was my favorite song. Summer Love and Etc.
Okay.
They went back and forth. I mean, that, you know, I you remember, I'm kind of a musical theater geek.
Right.
And I think that was probably the most theatrical song in the show, where they kind of go back and forth and they do the double screen and they're, you know, they're singing to each other, but they're not really, you know, together. They're in like different places on the school campus. There were just parts going all over the place. And that was a really fun way to open the show, let's say, to open the movie. So I think that was definitely my favorite. But I mean, it was so cute throughout that I hate to make any of the other numbers secondary. How about you? What was your favorite?
It has to be the opening number, Grease, by Frankie Valli.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah?
Yeah. I just love
the animated sequence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. I just, I love that. Just the sound of that song. It's just something. As soon as it starts, it kind of gets in me, and it's like, you know, it's just awesomeness. And I don't think there's any way to really describe just kind of like, I love the way that it just works. And like I said, I can't describe it, but I just love the actual song of that. And the opening sequence, like I said, the cartoon part of it.
Yeah, that was adorable. It really was.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's so many great songs to choose from, too. I mean, Grease Lightning.
Yeah, that was a good number, too. They did that well. They did that well. Although, I think, I hate to keep comparing to the show. I haven't actually seen the show, but I've heard a lot about the show, the actual stage show.
Yeah.
I think that was supposed to be Kaneki's number.
Yeah.
But they gave it to John Travolta, you know, because they just wanted to feature him through the whole film. So.
Sure.
That's kind of sad that he didn't get to do his solo. Poor guy.
Yeah, I know, right? It's like, what do you mean I'm not getting my solo? But I'm sure you got over it, just being part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's true. That did a lot for him, that film.
And then there was another one that was Olivia when she was I forgot the name of the song, but it was like when she was like taking the letter, the paper out, and then she puts it in the pool, and then all of a sudden there's John Travolta's face in the pool.
Yeah, that's Hopelessly Devoted.
Hopelessly Devoted. There you go. that was a good song.
That was sweet. That was sweet, and she sang that really well. I don't know that was my number one favorite of the. But she did a really good job as usual. I mean, she just her voice is so beautiful. You can listen to her sing anything. And that became kind of a signature song, I think, from that film. Like a lot of people, when you think of that film, they think of Hopelessly Devoted, which, was one of the nobody else in the cast was with her singing that. That was just her. So
right.
She really pulled it off, I guess. And I just thought it was so cute and so clever when they did the whole beauty school dropout scene.
Right.
Where they used Frankie Valli, who was an actual, teen idol, as the, the angel. And everybody else is kind of walking with, silver curlers in their hair and little angel outfits.
Yeah, the T-Birds even, like, swinging by on the wires.
The rest of the cast is all kind of dressed up in these little dream outfits. It was very cute. It was very thoughtfully done.
Probably the other song that stands out for me is Stranded at the Drive-In.
Aw, okay.
Yep. But
okay, yeah, that was a good one, again, with the cartoons going in the background.
Well, I mean, it wasn't so much the cartoons at that, but it was just, Travolta, just being, trying to be cool about the idea that he'd just gotten dumped, and, it was a touching moment, I can give it to John for that. He made that work really well.
Yeah, it was kind of emotional. And I remember driving. See, there's no more drive-ins. It's kind of sad, but I remember drive-ins. It was kind of a unique experience, and it would be pretty much a bummer to be left there on your own.
I would think it would be, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so poor guy, All right, it's a good song.
It is.
And he sang well. He was a talented guy. It was not, he started out as this goofy character on a TV show, and, he really blew up, and I think it was justified. I think he gave a hell of a performance in these musicals. So,
I think he did so well, and then he just kind of fell out of things for a while, and then you didn't see him again until Pulp Fiction.
That's right. There was kind of like a Travolta backlash for a while, where he disappeared.
Right, and then it wasn't until Tarantino, and he was like, "I'm going to put you in my movie," and then his career blew up again.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Good for him. He got a second wave.
Yeah.
But I kind of forgot about that. Yeah, I think people like had an overdose, I think, of John Travolta. Maybe when he did a sequel to Saturday Night Fever that was called Staying Alive.
Right.
And I remember seeing that in the theater, and that was when, what was his name? Tony Manero said he was going to be a Broadway dancer. And that was kind of corny, if I remember.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't think I've ever seen it.
It was kind of a jump the shark type of moment for that character, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so they had him dancing around in the skimpy costume and doing pirouettes and things. And, John Travolta kind of pulled that stuff off, but I don't know. It was like you feel, those kind of movies where you feel really manipulated by the whole circumstance and you're like, no, I'm not buying it. No.
Yeah.
I think that might have kind of done it for people. Like, okay, that's enough for you for now.
So let's see. So we talked about our favorite songs. What about favorite sequence of the movie?
Favorite sequence? I don't know. There were a lot, and I tend to like the musical numbers.
Okay.
So, I tend to like musical numbers, but let's see. I think when they're singing in at Sleepover, and Rizzo has a little blonde wig on, and she's making fun of
Sandra
Sandy.
D. Yes.
Yeah, and they're singing Sandra D.
Right.
And then she kind of gets caught. And she's like jumping on the bed and, you know, singing once again. I think they toned down the lyrics. I think they changed the lyrics from that original song. But in any case, she kind of gets caught. And, you know, Olivia Newton-John calls her out on it, despite the fact that she just threw up in the bathroom after, you know, taking one drag on a cigarette and trying to pierce her ears. So.
And then Rizzo says, some people are so touchy.
Yeah. So touchy. Yeah.
Did it bug you that they were, like, so old for high school students?
It kind of did. It was that was a certain amount of silliness that, you know, they did not nearly look like high school kids. No way. And I think Stalker Channing was like 30 when she did that film. So it's kind of, she's kind of like way out of the league, let's say. But I mean, they all did cute performances, but I think that's part of what made it feel a little cartoony, because they were older kids older actors and actresses, you know, heading out of their 20s or maybe even already out of their 20s, who were trying to act like teenagers. So they were like goofing it up in a way that wasn't really appropriate for them, for their body types anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I think that was kind of a common thing where they would have, they didn't cast a movie with teenagers in it and use actual teenagers. They used older people. I think it took a while, like maybe into the 80s when they started making all those John Hughes movies where they actually cast people who were the age of the character that was being depicted, you know?
Right, right.
That's what it was called different. You know, it was kind of a breakthrough moment there in teen comedies, let's say.
So I wonder if the Grease was, I wonder if they got cast just because they had the musical ability. Like, I wonder if that was like a big factor.
Yeah, I think so, and it worked. It worked, you know. So I guess they were right. But, I mean, a couple of them had to, I know John Travolta did the show, either on Broadway or in a touring company, like a couple of people in the class had actually done the show, the theatrical version of the show. So I think they were trying to find people who really could, you know, had some kind of vested interest, you know, and capability to really pull the show off.
Okay.
So, and that worked out okay. It worked well.
It did. It actually did. You know, and like I said,
chemistry.
Yeah, you know, I think they really worked really well together. And but yeah, I remember, you know, my adult sensibilities of it. You know, anytime I rewatch it now, where I'm like, those are not teenagers, and you know that. Yeah, it's like, come on, guys. You know.
Have you ever looked at like yearbooks and photos of people in the 50s? Those teenagers did not look like teenagers look now or when we were teenagers. They looked a lot older. I don't know what it was, you know, the vitamins, nutrition, the clothes, the fact that they hadn't introduced contact lenses yet and everybody was in thick glasses, or I don't know exactly what it was. But if you look at pictures of teenagers from the 50s, to me, they look a lot older physically than. And you know, we'll go back to the 20s or what have you. You know, back through the years, I think the difference is, tremendous as far as the youthfulness, you know, and how it's reflected in how kids dress and their makeup and their complexions. And so in a way, maybe it reflected a little bit more, you know, like in the 50s, maybe they would have looked a little more mature.
I would almost agree with you if I just didn't recently look through my daughter who just graduated high school. I looked through her yearbook, and there was more than a few times I'm looking at the senior pictures and going, that kid needs a shave. You know, and I'm actually, I actually said this out loud to her. I'm like, you figure at picture day, he would have shaved, you know, and he's got a full beard. And I'm like, I can't even do
maybe
that.
Hipster thing, yeah.
I can't do that. How could he do that? He's 18. But
I don't know.
Yeah, so, I just think there's some people that have this air about them that, you know, it makes, you know, they just have this older look mentality. And I think there was probably a lot more of that in the, you know, 60s, 70s, because I think the era of what they were wearing, you know, and I think you know, if you dress professionally, you act professionally, and that's probably what that was about. Because, you know, Picture Day was an event, you know, and people really got, you know, dressed up and suited up, and they just had this, you know, thing about them where it's more, you know, around a casual setting nowadays, but is, you know, well more done professionally now, but it's just more casual that you see. And I think that,
I guess so.
that kind of what it makes it looks like to me anyway.
I suppose so. But consider, you know, girls went to school every single day in skirts and big skirts and dresses and crinolines and things that, you know, like maybe made you more adult.
Right.
It was just more restrictive, and there just wasn't that much of a differentiation. I don't know. I guess then you watch a musical like Bye Bye Birdie, though, and they're all in the little capris and stuff, and, you know, they look a little bit more like the rebel teenagers, I mean, for the 50s, I guess, or the early 60s-ish era.
Right.
So I guess it kind of varies. Maybe it's the black and white photography that I'm thinking back on, you know, that makes everybody look older.
But yeah, going back to the rebel without a cause kind of thing. I mean, it seemed like all you needed back then to be a teenager on the edge is really a leather jacket. I think, you know, rolled up jeans and a leather jacket. I mean, Fonzie was doing that way for a long time. And then now we have the T-Birds doing it in this movie, and even the Pink Ladies of sorts. You know, if you give them the jacket with the emblem on the back, then that's a bad kid.
Yeah, it's like a precursor gang member or something. Yeah.
Except for the one guy that pulls out a squirt gun as his weapon, you know, so.
Yeah, I guess that's not too tough.
Yeah, that's our turf, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I guess if I had to pick a favorite scene, it would probably be the bonfire sequence. I like the when Danny and Sandy are reunited for the first time since being apart.
Yeah.
And then Danny.
He's mean.
And then, yeah, Danny, you know, they start, "How you been? What are you doing here?" You know, and he's just like, you know, his octave of his voice raises. And then all of a sudden he realizes where he's at and who he's with. And he's got to be all cool about it. And
he turns into an imbecile. It's just sad.
Yeah, it is completely.
Suddenly he's completely inarticulate. And
yeah. And then Rizzo is standing right there just loving every minute of it.
Yeah. Because I think she threw them together, didn't she? She figured it out.
Because she's like, "Danny Zuko? Yeah, I think we might know somebody like that." And,
maybe a green boy will show up again sometime soon.
That's exactly what she said. Yeah, right. Yeah, and then, you know, and then she threw them together, and then knowing that would be what would happen. Because she enjoyed, I think because she used to date Danny, if I remember the story
right.
Yeah,
and they have a history. Yeah. I think that was part of the background.
Right. So she had, they had broken up for whatever reason, and, you know, of course she was with Kaneki now. But she enjoyed busting John Travolta's balls, I think, or Danny's balls, if you will.
Yeah. Well, she did it.
Yeah, she did. She did it well.
Yeah. They kind of tortured poor Sandy, but I heard that actually that Sandy was actually modeled after, like, this was the guy who wrote the show. Was from some like high school in Los Angeles, like near Beverly Hills. And Donna Mills was one of his classmates who, if you remember, she was like an actress in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah.
With, you know, the big blonde hair and big blue eyes. And she was really very gorgeous. She was one of his classmates, and he was in love with her from afar. And I believe that he actually wrote the show about her. She was Sandy. So I think that's kind of neat.
That is. That's very awesome.
You know, Sandy went on to be, you know, a rather famous actress there in Hollywood, and, you know, had a show written about her as a teenager.
Oh, that's sweet. I wish I had the creative juices to write, you know, something that becomes like a play like that, you know, based on.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. But and
yeah, I wouldn't mind doing it.
Yeah, I remember you, Lisa. By the way, I remember you. Anyway. Yeah, she didn't know. Anyway, moving on. Yeah, love from afar. Love from afar. That was a girl I danced with at senior prom. No, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the one from the story that we did on the mixtape question.
Yes, yes.
There you go. Yep. See. Aw. Okay. That's nice.
Yep. An awe moment. That's what I was looking for right there. Did you ever write a letter to John?
No. You know,
why not?
I didn't. I don't know. I don't. You know, I think it was one of my friends who was writing fan letters to different people at the time and encouraged me to write the one to Olivia Newton-John because at the time, I had gotten the albums and I was listening to them, like I said, over and over again and singing along. And I don't know, maybe by the time John Travolta came around, that seemed kind of, I don't know, like I didn't want to be a groupie.
Okay.
By that point, I thought it was a little cooler than that. But, I was not, let's put it that way. I was not, but I wanted to be.
You wanted to be a groupie, but not a groupie.
Yeah. I gotcha. I wanted to be cooler than that. But I think we did have, the ice cream guy would come, the Good Humor Man would come around and sell, similar to baseball cards, they would sell cards with bubble gum in them. And there were scenes from Welcome Back, Kotter. And I collected those.
You still have them?
Because I was that cool. No, I don't still have them. I did not save those. I saved a lot of stuff in my life, but I did not save the cards. I had Charlie's Angels cards. I had Welcome Back, Kotter cards. I think I even going back further had Partridge Family cards.
Okay. Awesome.
And yeah, it was fun. It was a neat thing, and I wasn't the only one. People would come in and kind of compare them. And now and then, I'll go on eBay and I'll look for them. And I don't need to buy them. It's just enough to kind of see them on eBay.
Yeah.
Be like, I remember that one.
Yeah, actually, I had found, it was a link way back when that would show all the different trading cards. Like if somebody had a database and they would put in every trading card that came in that particular collection. And I remember perusing things where I saw images from the Welcome Back, Kotter and Partridge Family, definitely. I was looking at it from more the Star Trek stuff because I had all those. Next Generation, not the original.
Okay.
So that's
and they had cards?
Yeah.
Oh, they had trading cards?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I've got that's what I actually do have. I've got a box, a huge box of them. Besides I've got the sheet that has all the different numbered cards in order, but then you have the box of all the duplicates that you get. And downstairs in the basement, amongst all my comic book stuff, I've got my collector cards from various movies and whatnot that I may have collected over the years or started to collect but didn't finish. But then a ton of Star Trek Next Generation cards. So I get it. I get how you would be into those type of things. I was curious if you had the box somewhere that had all of the extras that you didn't get rid of.
Those I didn't save. I saved some toys from when I was a kid, but the middle school years, I think I wanted to purge.
Okay, that's fair.
It was rough. Middle school was rough. I went to a rough and tumble school. So I think once that was over, I was just like, be gone. Yeah. Well, you remember me.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Be gone, memories.
I was never that person. No.
Did you collect anything else about Welcome Back, Kotter, or just the cards?
I don't know that I collected too much else. I would save TV Guide color covers and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And in magazines and such. But I wouldn't say there was a collection. Yeah, it was still fun. I think we used to do trading. There was some kind of game that we did where we traded the cards and win them from each other, kind of like when you flip baseball cards.
Okay.
And that was kind of fun. And then you would build up a stack and then you'd lose them, have a bad run, Vegas or something.
Yeah, not too recently, but I had listened to a podcast where they were talking about the Welcome Back, Kotter lunchbox, And I guess the image that is depicted on that is an image that never was shown on the actual show. So the podcast was about trying to determine how the artist came up with the concept for that particular scene. You know, that had all the cast of characters, all the sweat hogs that had Cotter in it, and then the principal as well. I forgot what his name was. But,
Mr. Woodman.
Yeah, Mr. Woodman. Thank you.
Mr. Woodman.
Yep. And I guess this lunch pail or lunchbox is actually in the Smithsonian. They have a collection of lunch pails. Yeah. And so somebody had seen the image depicted on it. They go, I don't recall that from any of the TV shows. So there's an actual podcast episode where somebody looks up stuff that you can't, you know, just Google and find the answer for. And So she took it upon herself as a mission to find out, you know, where this image came from and what it was about. So it's really kind of cool. I'll have to find that podcast link, maybe share it with everybody.
Okay. So they didn't actually reveal, like, you didn't find out the actual origin of that. It's still a mystery, or they did find it out. You just didn't hear the end.
No. They speculated, because I guess the artist that had done the image, he had passed on, so they really couldn't go back and ask him.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at it online. It's like the proportions are very strange of these the depictions of these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and spoiler, I guess what they call that is it's like a cowboy prank. So it's like there's a knot in a shirt, and you know, they're upset about the knotted shirt. And I guess the cowboy prank is that, you know, if you left like your shirts unattended, one of the other cowboys would put the knot in it. And that way, when you went to go put your shirt on, you couldn't do it, and it was just, you know, a cowboy prank. So that's the theory as to what that's depicting. But it never was actually in any episode.
Wow, that's interesting.
So the guys that do the that created these images for lunch pails, they didn't necessarily have a set guidance. They just said, you know, we want these cast of characters, and you can kind of do your creative liberties. And that's what happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
I thought so too.
Who knows? Maybe he found some reference material or something that he used. I don't know. But I didn't have the lunchbox. I think by the time I was watching this, lunchboxes weren't quite so cool anymore. We were, you know, bringing in paper bags or buying lunch or something. But I did not have the lunchbox.
Yeah, I think for me, the graduation to hot lunches was like the mark of coolness, even though they tasted like crap.
Yeah. It's true. But then you didn't have to, you know, bring in the lunchbox with the cartoons on it. But I did have the Partridge Family.
You had the Partridge Family lunchbox.
I had the Partridge Family lunchbox. I had the Puff and Stuff lunchbox. But, you know, that's going back to like elementary school. So.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
I wish I saved those.
Yes, those were probably, if they were in really nice condition, yeah, I would think that would make you some money if you were even selling them.
Yeah, wish I did, but, you know, I didn't really have that much. I mean, my parents just bought these things, and then, you know, they threw them away. They were kind of in charge. The toys were mine. I don't know. The lunch accessories kind of, they got very beat up, first of all. Like, you can see, I'm looking at one of these online, the Welcome Back Cotter one. They got very beat up. These were not nicely treated thing. I guess maybe if you're really, you know, pristine type of, you know, person who needs everything just so. But my stuff got banged up a lot.
Yeah, I think normal wear and tear, that would definitely happen. I'm trying to find out if there was a lunchbox for Grease back in the day.
Oh, that I don't remember. But once again, I was a little older. I remember Grease being a big deal in the summer, like when I went to day camp. The second year I went to day camp, Grease was a huge deal. Everybody was singing it. Everybody had the album. It was just, you know, Grease-a-rama. Wherever you went, somebody was singing one of those songs. So,
I remember having the it was a double album, right? Like you had like two LPs in it.
I think so. Hard to remember. Yeah, I think my parents had the album because my father was actually like a doo-wop singer back in the day. He was kind of
a greaser. That's cool.
Yeah, my father was kind of a greaser, and you know my mom sang, but you know they were both kind of. They were way into the 50s doo-wop and such. So,
okay.
So, you know, they had the albums. So it didn't quite belong to me, but it was playing all the time. So, you know, it was an intergenerational thing at my house. Greece.
Yeah, I actually, my mom was into the, 50s, 60s rock and roll. And I think I mentioned that before. But, yeah, this album, you know, it kind of transcended time. You know, because of it had that look and feel of 50s, 60s rock and roll. But, you know, it came out obviously in the 70s.
Yes. Yeah, but it caused kind of a little bit, or was caught up in kind of a resurgence, you know, when then American Graffiti came out and Happy Days came out. There was all this nostalgia for the 50s, and it was depicted in a lot of different ways in entertainment in the 70s. So that was an interesting little mirror, I think, that happened, a little like loophole, a wormhole in time that happened in the 70s when everybody was kind of pining back to the greasers and the Bobby Soxers and such. So it was kind of neat. My parents were very into that whole thing.
So kind of what we're getting now when we're watching TV shows or movies that are depicting the 80s, then Grease was that for our parents.
Yes, exactly.
That's cool.
Exactly.
I didn't even think about it that way until just now.
Yeah. The 80s resurgence, I think, is kind of similar to when everybody was pining for the 50s and having, like, we had a sock hop at day camp. You know, it was like, it was a cool thing to have 50s parties at that time,
right?
Back in the 70s. You know, now people are having like 80s parties and dressing up in Dayglow and stuff and looking like Madonna.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No. I didn't say there was anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, know.
I don't love Madonna, kidding. But I wouldn't begrudge anyone from having their 80s fun.
What do you mean you don't like Material Girl? What?
No. I don't. I don't like Madonna. Sorry.
Sacrilege.
I didn't know. I won't say mean things because I don't want to don't disturb your sensibilities. But she was not for me.
She wasn't your cup of tea. Got it.
No. But you know, if people want to get dressed up like Madonna and dance around at an 80s party, I won't begrudge them that pleasure.
So, have you ever dressed up like Sandy?
I think I did go to the sock hop in 1977 at day camp. I don't remember if it was quite. I mean, I don't think I could ever pull off Sandy. I'm too dark. I'm more of a Rizzo-looking type. But I think my mother did jump to the occasion and make me like a poodle skirt or something, and
sure,
you know, sneakers and ankle socks and the. Well, I guess I couldn't have had a ponytail. I had short hair that year, the one year of my life. But in any case, I never really would have passed for Sandy. But yeah, we did do the sock hop, and we did the twist, and it was fun. It was fun. I haven't really done it since.
I'm trying to remember what the occasion was, but I remember there was once where I had the leather jacket, the white T-shirt, my dad's Groom and Clean in my hair. Yeah. He liked that stuff. But that was very slick, slippery stuff. Something I wasn't a fan of. But,
how long did it take you to get out of your hair?
I don't know. Yeah. It's like, what are you putting in your hair? Oh, you want to put it in mine now? Great. Well, as a kid, I always had that cowlick that was up in the back. And so he's trying to find some way to help with that. And, yeah, that stuff worked, but, you'd be a greaser all day.
Yeah. It was kind of the thing to do at the time, though, you know?
That's what you had for men's products, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And then there was a point in the 70s where the style like transitioned away from that. I remember commercials like the wet head is dead. That was like this big, you know, commercial campaign. And then it turned into everybody with the long feathered hair that just was all over the place.
Yeah. Very nicely coiffed.
Yeah. Or just like long, just even the guys like this, the long hair with the wings go back, just feathered all over the place. You know, it was like, you just have to rebel against whatever it was that your parents did. So.
Yeah. Did you ever have a friend that had the rat tail?
I did have a friend or two that had the rat tail, but it was an 80s rat tail.
Okay.
Like, is that what you're talking about? Like,
Yeah, exactly.
I got a guy that I went out with, had one that was like dyed three different colors, and he would braid it. One day I came out and he made me braid it. So I'm like, what? How did I get into, I don't know if I signed up for this. I'm braiding my boyfriend's hair.
Welcome to the
80s. That was kind of neat. Yeah, that was
We were talking about hairstyles, and for some reason that just popped in my head. Because I was like, that's one that I never got into. I was like, are you serious? Really? But, you know, I mean, certain guys pulled it off. So, you know, go ahead. So back to Greece. Is there anything else you want to cover about that movie?
I don't know. I think it would really be really terrific if my high school hired a whole carnival.
Right.
And put it on the grounds of the campus so that when we graduated, we could all have a great time. I kind of looked at that like, what the? Who the hell does that?
Yeah, exactly. You know, even the my youngest, I had participated in what they called Field Day, and it was nowhere near extravagant as what was going on in Greece. And
yeah,
it was just kind of like, yeah, you had maybe one blow up house, and that was pretty much what you had going on, you know, other than a bunch of like, you know, frisbee and water balloon tosses and
nothing like that.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, you know, that's cool for what it is, but it's no like, you know, Ferris wheel and, you know, fun house.
Yeah,
you know, so that, you know, John and
Shake Shack. Yeah, what was that?
Yeah.
Thing that they were on in the end.
Yeah, the Shake Shack. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. That I think would have been nice. And my high school didn't quite give us the same benefits.
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, that right there solidified the love affair with Olivia Newton-John. That the new Sandy look.
Oh boy, I heard they had to actually like sew her into that costume. She couldn't take
it
off.
Not surprising me. Not surprising me at all.
They'd sew her in, and they'd have to like rip it off and redo it the next day. But
wonder how many days she had to wear that.
Yeah, I don't know, but. But I did hear, yeah, they did, you know, there's a lot of stuff online, a lot of like Greece quizzes and stuff and memes and things online.
Right.
And I heard it was like 104 degrees or something when they were trying to do that number. And that the dancers kept passing out.
Oh, God, that's horrible.
There's some vigorous stuff that goes on. I mean, not even like you can tell the main characters don't ever have to dance quite, you know, as professionally as some of the background dancers, but they had people doing some pretty intense choreography in that number.
Right,
and they said that they lost some people, like some people just didn't pass out because it was so hot. But you know, all for the cause.
It almost makes you want to rewatch that scene just to see if I could see anybody like sweating profusely. Because you know I would be. I would be like, no, you guys go on ahead. I'll be back here laying on the ground.
No, but I think those were the kind of the far away numbers where a whole bunch of kids are dancing at once.
Right, so, right.
You know, which is neat stuff.
Yeah, no, I completely neglected that whole sequence. But you're right. That was very iconic. And then the whole thing with them kind of like taking off into the sky in the car.
Yeah, that was a weird ending.
It was. Bizarre.
like suddenly they're in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Like, what the heck is going on?
But, you know, if you want to go full circle, they start out with cartoons, and, you know, then they're taken off into the sky. So, maybe that kind of blends together with the beginning and the end somehow. It was as close as you can get to a cartoon sequence, before the end of the movie.
I just wondered, you know what? That, I don't know, even as a 12-year-old, I was kind of like, what? I don't get it.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know where they're headed.
It's true.
So that would be good to know.
But, like, you know, I mean, you bought all the rest of it, so, you know, let it go.
Where's that car? Where's the destination?
Yeah, exactly. Who's driving steering this thing? Suddenly they're in a Bond vehicle. I don't know.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, and it's all of a sudden they just needed Doc Brown there to say, Rhodes, we don't need Rhodes.
Yeah, she's waving at the back.
Yeah, I know.
Hi! Like, you know, they're off in Santa's sleigh or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so if any of our listeners have a theory as to, like, where the hell that car was headed, please go ahead and drop us a tweet or an email. I'd love to hear that theory.
Yeah, let us know, because we don't understand.
That's a great way to end. So we're right there at the end of the movie. So, Suzanne, why don't you remind our listeners where they can find you online?
Yes. Okay. Well, my website is Suzanne... Mattaboni.com. It's SuzanneMattaboni. I am Suze Mattaboni on Twitter. I am Suzanne Mattaboni 80s on Instagram. So you can see any of those fun things. Like every time we do one of these podcasts, I'll write like some commentary, you know, and we have a nice blog to go with it. So you can take a look at those. And various other pieces of fiction that I'm in if you want to, you know, check anything out. So that's me.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of those blog entries. I love the way you put that together. So great stuff.
Thank you. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the fact that now people are actually, like, looking at them from listening to this. So, you know, I have to thank you.
Yeah. No. It's warranted. You're a very talented writer, and
I just the
way you put together just kind of the feelings of kind of a little bit after the episode kind of thought process, and I'm like, that's awesome. So I didn't even think about that, and so cool. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, so for us, if you want to check out our website, that's Banzai Retro Club. That's Banzai. I always spell it out because I don't want people to be confused with little trees. you know, if you want to go to that website, follow our various social media accounts. There's Twitter, there's Tumblr, there's Facebook, Instagram. Please go out there, check all that stuff out. We would love for you to comment, follow, do all that stuff that you do so well. We appreciate you. And if you do have a iDevice of any sorts, go ahead and give us a subscription to our podcast. Give us a rating review. Actually, any of the podcast services, we'd love you to do that. If there's such a mechanism to allow you to do that, we'd appreciate it. So with all of that said, we want you to be excellent to each other and have a good whatever. Bye.
This has been a Banzai Retro Club production.
Banzai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 Why, this car is automatic, systematic, hydromatic. Why, it's a greased lightning.
coasting through the lab, child. You are spring, the chicks are cream, for Grease Lightning. We'll get some purple French tail, that's 30-inch things, oh yeah. A Palomino dashboard and jewel like the twins, oh yeah. With new pistols, clubs, and shots, I can get all my rocks. You know that I ain't bragging, she's a real pussy wagon, Grease Lightning.
The sun.